Is a lecture given by His Holiness Devamrita Swami on Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 10th chapter, text number 13, recorded on the 17th of May 2015 in Sydney.
Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 10. Prahlad, the best among exalted devotees. Text 13. Bhogena punyam kushalena papam kalevaram kala javena hitta kirtim vishuddham suraloka gitam vithayamam ishasi muktabandha. My dear Prahlad, while you are in this material world, you will exhaust all the reactions of pious activity by feeling happiness. And by acting piously, you will neutralize impious activity. Because of the powerful time factor, you will give up your body, but the glories of your activities will be sung in the upper planetary systems, and being fully freed from bondage, you will return home back to God. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Evam praladasyam chena sadhana siddhatvam nitya siddhatvam tanaradhadva divajgeyam. There are two classes of devotees, the sadhana siddha and the nitya siddha. Prahlad Maharaj is a mixed siddha. That is, he is perfect partly because of executing devotional service and partly because of eternal perfection. Thus he is compared to such devotees as Narada. Formerly, Narada Muni was the son of a maidservant, and therefore in his next birth, he attained perfection, sadhana siddhi, because of having executed devotional service. Yet he is also a nitya siddha, because he never forgets the Supreme Personality of God. The word kushalena is very important. One should live in the material world very expertly. The material world is known as the world of duality, because one sometimes has to act impiously and sometimes has to act piously. Although one does not want to act impiously, the world is so fashioned that there is always danger. Padam padam yad vipatam. Thus, even when performing devotional service, a devotee has to create many enemies. Prahlad Maharaj himself had experience of this, for even his father became his enemy. A devotee should expertly manage to think always of the Supreme Lord so that the reactions of suffering cannot touch him. This is the expert management of papa punya, pious and impious activities. An exalted devotee like Prahlad Maharaj is jivan mukta. He is liberated even in this very life in the material body. Om Gyanachimananda-sya Gyananjana-shalakaya Chakshun-militanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In this section of the Bhagavatam, we deal with issues that are especially important to us. Receiving benedictions, receiving opulence, feeling material happiness. Yes, we would like to repudiate all that and say, simply give me pure bhakti. Prahlad Maharaj is setting the standard for unalloyed love. We shouldn't become depressed by hearing the real standard. Sometimes we may take it that way. Since we'll never attain such a level, then what's the use of even trying? We might as well just enjoy the material world and offer some prayers to God. But the natural and eternal propensity of the living entity is pure love. So by not striving for pure love, we are acting against our nature. Indeed, we are disrupting our natural happiness. Natural happiness means to act as Krishna's servant without ordering Krishna, without expecting any customer service from Krishna. Living in this world means we're full of demands. We expect to have our desires fulfilled. And sometimes we even protest. What's the point in having these desires if they're not going to be fulfilled, right? We make a combined package of the situation. I have desires? That means they must be fulfilled. It all makes sense, yes? Yet we're shocked when we read in the purports in this chapter that you may have material desires, but they are a disease. And those desires bring about another body. So you might say, okay, you get another body. Body is an opportunity to fulfill desires. All right, fair enough. I don't mind taking another body because it's a vehicle to fulfill desires. But there's a catch. Although you have desires which lead to another body, no matter how many bodies you take, those desires are never fulfilled. Unbelievable, isn't it? We're so brainwashed and victimized by thinking, naturally, because I have desires, at least to a great extent, those material desires will be fulfilled, and that's the best way to deal with them. But Srila Prabhupada takes great care to educate us that material desires are never fulfilled. They're never satisfied. There's just the illusion that they'll be satisfied. This is why Shukadeva Goswami in the second canto of Bhagavatam makes that famous statement, Pashyanapi Napashyati. You're all sufficiently experienced, he says, but you still don't see what's going on. In other words, experience is not a teacher. You're sufficiently experienced, but you still haven't figured out what the trap is. In other words, as Shukadeva Goswami says, you see, but you do not see. Maybe you've had that experience in your everyday life of looking for something, losing your keys or your mobile phone or something, and it's actually right in front of you, but you can't see it. It's quite embarrassing. And then someone, one of your friends or acquaintances says, hey, there it is right there. Oh, God, I missed it. It's embarrassing. We like to feel that we're competent, that we know quite a lot, and we're expert in pushing on our life. So Shukadeva Goswami makes this point. Pashyanapi Napashyati. You see, but actually you don't see. Once we can focus on the desire monster, then we are dealing with the central action, the central dynamic of our life. What am I going to do about that desire monster? Do I just ignore it? Let it gobble up everything in my life? How do I tame it? Seems impossible. Now let's look at Prahlad Maharaj's example. He's showing you organic life. He's showing you natural life. So let's not just push Prahlad into rarefied atmosphere far beyond us and say, all glories to you, Prahlad, but meanwhile, down here on the ground, you know, there's some things I got to do, you know? There's some things I have to go through, Prahlad. No, let's look at Prahlad as the exemplar, the standard. Indeed, amongst the 12 Mahajans, the 12 great authorities of bhakti, Prahlad Maharaj is considered the greatest example for how to live in the material world while remaining focused on Krishna. Amongst the 9 devotional activities, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, hearing and chanting about Krishna, remembering, worshipping lotus feet, surrendering everything, so forth, Prahlad Maharaj is the epitome of smaranam, remembering. That's how he associates with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by remembrance. In this age of Kali, however, we are taught to lay the basis of hearing and chanting. Those two are the basis of all the other processes of devotional service. By hearing and chanting about Krishna, gradually we develop the ability to remember Krishna. So we're not instructed to immediately jump to the platform of Prahlad Maharaj, thinking we can just remember Krishna simply on the strength of our powers of recollection. No. Because this age of Kali is so disturbed and so full of agitation, we develop in bhakti primarily by laying the foundation of hearing and chanting about Krishna, developing attachment for hearing and chanting about Krishna. Then everything else follows. Lord Nrsingadev offered Prahlad benedictions. Whatever you want, Prahlad, take from me. It is my pastime, it is my leela to fulfill everyone's desires. So why not you, Prahlad? Ask from me whatever you want. This sounds great. Oh, this is really religion, yes. Yes. This is a good guy. Even though he's in the form of half man, half lion. Lord Nrsingadev understands ground zero. He understands that level of life that's lived in the real world. And what is Prahlad's response? He says to Lord Nrsingadev, please, please, consider my family background. I was born in a family of demons. I'm very susceptible to material desires. Please, my lord, don't tempt me. Furthermore, I have seen my father, who possessed more power than anyone in the universe. He possessed more opulence than anyone. The demigods were in fear of him. Yet I've seen all my father's power, majesty, and opulence vanquished in a split second. So what is the use of material benedictions? So what would our response be? Well, the opulence and power may be vanquished quickly, but at least in those few seconds, we can have a good time, right? But Prahlad Maharaj is showing us how to be intelligent. Why should we try to enjoy what I was just reading Prabhupada describe as a kingdom of hallucinations? But we're so attached to that. Due to our upbringing, due to our past lives. That's why Prahlad Maharaj, taking our part, taking our side, says to Lord Nrsingadev, please consider my family background. Don't dangle these things in front of me. But then Prahlad backs up and says, but you would never tempt your devotee. So then why are you asking me what material benediction I want? And it was not only material benedictions, but even spiritual liberation to Vaikuntha. Lord Nrsingadev was offering the whole package, material and spiritual. But Prahlad said, you're not trying to tempt me. What you want me to do is demonstrate the standard of pure love. Indeed, you have sent me into this world to demonstrate the qualities of a pure devotee. So that's why we're going through this exercise here. Not that you're trying to entrap me. You know what entrapment is? They have that legal term in Australia, Pratapa, entrapment? Yes. When you're a criminal dealing some contraband and the undercover policeman comes to you and sets up a deal so he can bust you. And he can, come on. Don't you, this is a good price. Yeah, let's make the deal. Come on. If it can be shown in court after your arrest that the undercover policeman really was pushing you, it's called entrapment. So in many countries, you'll be thrown out of court. So is Lord Nisshringa trying to entrap Prahlada? Just think of the ecstasy exchange between Prahlada and Lord Nisshringa after the killing of Hiranyakashipu. No one could pacify Lord Nisshringadeva. Not even Lakshmi Devi. By the Yoga Maya potency, Lakshmi Devi forgot that she had seen Lord Nisshringadeva in previous days of Brahma, and she'd also seen him in Vaikuntha, where every incarnation has his own planet. She forgot all that by the influence of Yoga Maya and said, I've never seen a form like this before. She couldn't calm down Lord Nisshringadeva. Lord Brahma couldn't. Lord Shiva couldn't. So, you know what happened. Lord Brahma, he went to Prahlad. Prahlad, it's on you. It's all because of you that Lord Nisshringadeva has appeared. So you kindly step forward and pacify the Lord. Otherwise, this roaring is shaking the whole universe. Remember when Lord Nisshringadeva killed Hiranyakashipu? He ripped open his abdomen, pulled out his intestines and garlanded himself with those. You know, the perfect picture for newcomers to see when they come to the temple. Make sure you have one in every preaching center. You got one at the Lotus Room for Tom? Lord Nisshringadeva, after ripping open Hiranyakashipu's abdomen, he also ripped out his heart. And what did he do? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that as Lord Nisshringadeva is holding Hiranyakashipu's heart, he's thinking, this is actually the heart of my devotee. I reside in this heart, but how, in this heart of someone who's actually my devotee, how did it become so filled with extreme lust, anger, and greed? So that's what Lord Nisshringadeva was thinking as he's holding the heart. Then he tossed it aside. So, Prahlad steps forward to pacify Lord Nisshringadeva. And the Shastras describe that Lord Nisshringadeva actually picked Prahlad up and began to rock him on his lap. And then Lord Nisshringadeva began to lick Prahlad's whole body, just like a lion would lick the body of the lion cub. And of course, the Bhagavatam describes how Lord Nisshringadeva put his paw on Prahlad's head, and that empowered Prahlad to offer the most memorable prayers. In those prayers by Prahlad Maharaj, you see the concerns of a devotee. He prayed to Lord Nisshringadeva that, on one hand, he says, I'm not afraid of material existence. On the other hand, he says, I am afraid. So how can this be? Is this a contradiction? One prayer says, I'm not afraid. The other prayer says, I'm afraid. Prahlad is not afraid of material miseries, per se. He's already demonstrated that. His father put him through hell in every conceivable way, trying to have him killed in every conceivable way. So, Prahlad is far beyond material happiness and distress. But what is he afraid of, then, when he says, I'm afraid of material existence? He prays Lord Nisshringadeva, I've been in the association of demons. When will you call me back to Godhead? I'm afraid of their association. That is the key. He's not afraid of the material world in terms of threefold miseries. of the body and mind, from other living entities, from disturbances by nature. He is afraid of the association that naturally you get by being in the material world. He's afraid that that association produces aversion for the Supreme Personality of God. Callousness and even rejection of the Supreme Personality of God. And that's the only thing Prahlad's afraid of. Therefore, he said, I'm afraid of the material world. I'm afraid of being in the cycle of samsara, repeated birth and death, because in that cycle of samsara, it's not the miseries that bother me, it's the potential to forget you that bothers me. It's the potential that might make me averse to you that puts me in anxiety. I'm afraid of that. Otherwise, Prahlad says that famous verse, Nai Bhogjije Puradharatayas Paitaranyas. I'm always absorbed in the Mahamrita, the great ocean of hearing and chanting about the Supreme Personality of God. The material world doesn't bother me, but I'm lamenting, Shote Tatova Mukachetasa Indriyarta. I'm lamenting for all those unfortunate living entities struggling for material happiness. I feel for them. We want to get to that point in our spiritual development in which we're not attracted by material enjoyment, gratification, but we're lamenting truly about such a wastage of life. Yes, in the beginning, we may say it artificially. Ah, they're all suffering, we know it. I don't know, do I really know it? They may look like they're enjoying, but we know. I think we know. Actually, they're not enjoying. It's all temporary anyway. Yeah, but even though it's temporary, I wish I had some of that. In the beginning, we're speaking theoretically. But that's okay. You get realization by repeating Krishna's words. Just like a little child hears from the father, this is a book. So the child repeats, this is a book. Are you going to criticize a child? You have no realization. This is speaking theoretically. How else is the child supposed to grow? The child has to start somewhere. And the authorized way, relatively speaking, for the child to learn is by hearing from the father or the mother. This is this and that is that. And the child repeats. If the child has good parents, it'll work out. So yes, in the beginning of our devotional life, there's no harm in repeating what we've heard, because in that way, we get realization. In that way, we gradually develop realization of what we're saying. So we don't have to be afraid of repeating Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita. To kalam shashvatam, this material world is a temporary, miserable place. While we repeat those words, we're praying to Krishna, please give me realization of this. In the earliest days of ISKCON, the second temple in Boston, 1967 or so, the devotees had just opened up shop there in terms of establishing a center. And of course, the news media was very interested. These strange-looking persons practicing a strange religion. What are they doing? So they came to interview the devotees. And there were very few books published then. And the devotees, they just could only just repeat in a very simple way what they heard from Prabhupada. So when the reporters came around, the temple president responded to their questions. The news reporter said, so, what is this Krishna consciousness all about? The president replied, it's all about knowing that this material world is hell. So that's what the newspaper reporter printed. New religious group says, this world is hell. When Prabhupada saw that article, he applauded. He was very happy. Yeah. He understood that, you know, These devotees are repeating what they heard from him, and gradually they'll progress. So let's not be afraid to say what Krishna says. Indeed, that is the main qualification to be a guru, simply to repeat what Krishna says. So you may say, well, what's the big deal about repeating what Krishna says? But just try to do that in every circumstance. You simply say what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, your life will be quite defined for you, because Krishna speaks quite clearly about what is real happiness, what is the nature of the material world, and what is the nature of pure love. Prahlad Maharaj is demonstrating that pure love. He's offered, when he concluded his prayers, Lord Nrisimhadeva was very pleased and offered Prahlad whatever benediction he wanted. And Prahlad is not even taking spiritual benedictions. What Prahlad says is very important for us, because we will never be satisfied by anything except pure love. Let's face it. In our natural, original, spiritual situation, we do nothing but love Krishna purely. That's the real life. It feels like now we're so far from that standard, but still, that is natural life. I don't know if any of you have ever been so sick before that you forgot what it's like to be healthy. Has it happened to anyone? Yes. You just couldn't remember what it's like to function with full health. So that is like our current conditioned state. We're so far from Krishna that we've forgotten what our natural existence is. And it seems like we'll never get there again. Ever been very sick? You go from doctor to doctor, from diagnosis to diagnosis, from lab to lab, and it's like, oh, when will I ever get over this? So that's sort of like what we're feeling now, hearing about Prahlad Maharaj. Oh, such a standard. I'll never get there. And while we're thinking like that, we leave the door wide open for the illusory energy, Maya. What does Maya tell us? You're right, you'll never get there. I understand that you want to be pious. I understand you want to believe in God. That's nice. But meanwhile, there's so many things for your senses that are available right now. Why delay? You know you're not going to make it. You know you're not going to develop pure love of Krishna. So why don't you just do the necessary right now. Avoid the traffic jam, avoid peak hour traffic, and just right now, just understand that you need to be practical, you know? So, when we push Prahlad Maharaj's example impossibly beyond us, then we leave the back door open for this kind of coercion from the illusory energy. How to be immune to that kind of coercion through the back door? Know what your real nature is. Your real nature is perfect health. That means pure love of Krishna. And Prahlad is showing you what the standard is. Just by your appreciating that standard, just by your hearing about that standard, we become purified. So it's not like, okay, time to talk about Prahlad Maharaj.
So far beyond us. Kijai, Prahlad.
By hearing about Prahlad and Lord Nrisimhadeva, their relationship, we become purified. So, how can you protest? We make progress toward the standard of pure love by hearing about Prahlad Maharaj's pure love. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which I hope those of you who have read all Prabhupada's books, I hope that you have tasted Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami, so expertly presented by a departed godbrother, Gopi Pranadana Prabhu. I hope that everyone, because it takes the conclusions of Bhagavatam in terms of pure love and goes deeper and deeper. So there you read how Narada Muni is searching for who is the greatest devotee. And he goes from place to place, devotee to devotee. Each devotee is sending him to someone else. No, not me. It's so-and-so. And then he goes to that devotee. Not me. It's so-and-so. So this way, Narada Muni is touring the whole material and spiritual world. Because each devotee that he's sent to will deny that devotee's a good devotee. Not me. No. I don't know why anyone said it about me. Better go see so-and-so. That's a real devotee. So when Narada Muni got to Lord Shiva, Lord Shiva said, I am nothing. Everyone knows it's Prahlad. And Lord Shiva told Prahlad a little bit about, told Narada Muni a little bit about Prahlad's glories. But, you see, everyone's a person. Even in the highest levels of the universe, even in the spiritual world, there's personal dealings that one has to be sensitive to. So what did Lord Shiva say to Narada Muni? I would tell you more about Prahlad's glories, but there's a little bit of complication here. My wife is Gauri. Parvati, you know? She's friends with Mahalakshmi in Vaikuntha. Mahalakshmi in Vaikuntha, the consort of Narayan, thinks she's the best devotee. If my wife tells Mahalakshmi that I've been glorifying Prahlad, Mahalakshmi will get bent out of shape and she'll disrespect me, she'll disrespect Prahlad, it'll be a whole commotion. So better I not say too much about Prahlad's glories. Better you just go see for yourself. So you see, you might ask, how in these highest levels of existence is this still going on? It's because everyone's a person. So without any further information from Lord Shiva, Narada Muni went to see Prahlad. Lord Shiva warned Prahlad, be careful in your glorification of Prahlad when you see him, because he may get angry. He doesn't want to be glorified. But Narada Muni was in such ecstasy, he went running to find Prahlad. He found Prahlad in the lower planetary system, because that's the place where he was given to do his service of ruling the demons. So Narada Muni is running. Now remember, this is Prahlad's actually Narada Muni's disciple. But Narada Muni is so lost in the ecstasy of searching for the best bhakti, the best devotion, that he just disregards all etiquette. And even though Prahlad's actually his disciple, remember? Prahlad was in the womb of his mother, and Narada Muni instructed the mother, knowing Prahlad's in the womb. So the mother forgot Narada Muni's instructions because she was so much in anxiety. Where's my husband? Where's Hiranyakashipu? He's missing in action. So due to circumstances, we can forget our transcendental knowledge. We should learn from Hiranyakashipu's wife, Prahlad's mother, that we should expertly live so that our consciousness is not so disturbed by material external affairs. So both Prahlad in the womb and the mother heard from Narada Muni. She forgot. Prahlad, though, in the womb, remembered everything, showing us that material circumstances cannot triumph over bhakti. I often point out, because sometimes devotees think, oh, this sounds a bit mythological, that a baby in the womb can hear transcendental knowledge and remember it. But I've even seen scans of children in the womb dancing according to the music that the mother's listening. You can see actual scans of that. So what's so far-fetched about an advanced child then being able to hear transcendental knowledge and assimilate it? Narada Muni arrives before Prahlad, and he's running. He's so attracted by hearing the glories of a devotee. We'd like to get to that state. Yes, would we like to get to that level? We're so eager to hear the glories of devotees that we run. Or in Chaitanya Leela, you read about when the devotees hear Lord Chaitanya glorifying a particular devotee, all the other devotees cry, they're so happy. When will that day be ours? Anyway, that's real devotion. Someone is serving your beloved, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so nicely. Not only do you not feel envy or jealousy, but you feel such joy that you cry. Oh, this devotee is serving my Lord so wonderfully. When will that day be ours? That is life on the spiritual platform. So Narada begins to glorify Prahlad Maharaj. And if you read Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you'll see how Prahlad Maharaj handles it very expertly. He listens and responds to what Narada Muni is saying, but he qualifies all the statements. Well, that may seem to be true about me, but actually it's not. And it's not. And all the things you're saying aren't really due to me. It's because of my spiritual master, who, by the way, happens to be you. So, what happened when Lord Nrisingadeva offered Prahlad any benediction he wanted, even spiritual? Prahlad says, I know you're not trying to trap me. You're just trying to demonstrate what is pure love. Pure love means that I am your servant and you are the master. Eternally, it will be like that. We have no other relationship. This is the natural way to be happy. That I don't make you my order supplier. I am simply your servant. In this way, Prahlad Maharaj is demonstrating what is organic happiness. Simply to be the servant of the Supreme without making any orders, without making any requests that are material. Prahlad didn't even request liberation to the spiritual world. The Acharyas point out that Lord Nrisingadeva was saying to Prahlad, wait a minute, even the greatest rishis and sages want liberation, and you're a child of a demoniac family? You don't want even that? Come on. Lord Nrisingadeva is giving Prahlad a chance to demonstrate Prahlad's determination to simply be an unconditional servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But because Nrisingadeva was pushing Prahlad, ask for something, finally they settled on something, they compromised. Not a material compromise. Prahlad said, all right, if I must ask for something, I beg you that within the core of my heart there be no material desires. Since I must possess something, I must ask something from you. For there to actually be no material desires in the core of our heart, we have to become full of spiritual desires. And that is Lord Chaitanya's program. Engage in devotional service, develop spiritual desires, and the material desires will be forced out because there's no room for them. This is what makes the impossible possible for us. Yes, we can make progress to the standard of pure love when we take advantage of the miracle of devotional service. By that miracle of devotional service, we take on spiritual desires. And those spiritual desires crowd out the material desires. Otherwise, I agree with you, it's hopeless. Materially speaking, you have a right to think this whole process is hopeless, except that there is the miracle of devotional service. By engaging in devotional service, your spiritual desires remanifest and crown out the material desires. Now, it's true that we need the association of devotees to make sure that we're not developing, again, material desires masquerading as spiritual desires. That's why bhakti requires guidance, the Vaishnavas, the guru. We want to make sure that by our chanting, we are not watering material desires. Our chanting is watering spiritual desires. What gives us complete hope is that we have service. When we talk about Lord Chaitanya's flood of love of God, we're meaning the flood of devotional service. So we want to learn how to swim in that flood. We always want to be grateful for the flood. We never want to think, oh, I've got too much service. Why do they always come to me for service? Why don't they go to some other devotee? Yes, we have to live a balanced life in bhakti, taking care of our health, eating properly. Krishna himself says, you can't be a yogi if you eat too much or eat too little, sleep too much or sleep too little. But we never want to begrudge or resent the flood of devotional service. Instead, we want to beg Krishna, please teach me how to swim in that flood, how to thrive in that flood. Any inability to do that is my own fault. I'm begging you, please give me that mercy, give me that ability to swim in the flood of devotional service. And as you swim in that flood and learn to splash about and dive and spiritual desires start to crowd out the material desires. And indeed, you start to always check yourself. Is what I'm doing actually for Krishna's pleasure, or is it my own thing, for my own gratification? This is the way a relationship goes. You become more and more sensitive to Krishna's pleasure. And by becoming more and more sensitive to Krishna's pleasure, your natural status as a pure lover of Krishna gradually revives. Normally it would be impossible, but Lord Chaitanya has made the impossible possible. Normally we'd have a right to think, I'll never get there. But because of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Nityananda Prabhu, it's completely possible. So Prahlad has finally made a request. Okay, I have to ask for something. Make it so that within the core of my heart, there are no material desires. I'm your unmotivated servant. That's the way it was in the past. That's the way it is now. That's the way it'll always be in the future. It's Prahlad's very emphatic declaration of what is pure bhakti. He says, oh my Lord, I am your unmotivated servant, and you are my eternal master. There is no need of our being anything other than master and servant. You are naturally my master, and I am naturally your servant. We have no other relationship. What is Lord Nrisingadeva's response? My dear Prahlad, it is true, a devotee like you never desires material opulences, either in this life or the next. Still, I order you to enjoy the opulences of the demons in this material world. Sounds good, doesn't it? Yeah. Lord Nrisingadeva was really practical. He knows how to inspire us. To be ordered to enjoy the opulences of the demons while still being a devotee? Not getting better than that, right? Prahlad, of course, has no interest to enjoy opulence, but remember Prahlad's compassion on living entities in this material world. He said, I have nothing to lament for, but I'm lamenting for the condition of those who have forgotten Krishna. So therefore, Lord Nrisingadeva gave Prahlad devotional service. And he said that, I order you to enjoy the opulence of the demons, meaning you can live on high while being totally absorbed in my service. You can administrate the kingdom in such a way that gradually everyone becomes Krishna conscious. In the verse preceding this, Lord Nrisingadeva says something a bit surprising. He says, it doesn't matter that you're in the material world. Maybe it doesn't matter that I'm in the material world. Aren't we supposed to want to get out of the material world? Yes and no. It is intelligent to want to get out of material existence. But at the highest levels of bhakti, you realize that as long as I have devotional service, I'm out of the material world. That's why when you recite the Shikshastaka, you repeat Lord Chaitanya's words, Mama Janmani Janmani Ishwade, Bhavatan Bhakti Ahoy Tiki Twai. I don't mind taking birth after birth as long as I have service to Krishna's lotus feet. This is for real. Prahlad is showing you. This, you know, these are not just words that you recite. This is the reality. So Lord Nrisingadeva said, doesn't matter you're in the material world. Just always continuously hear the instructions and messages from me. Be always absorbed in thinking of me. And then, in today's verse, he further elaborates on Prahlad's existence, so-called within the material world. He says, my dear Prahlad, while you're in this material world, this is what's going to happen. You're going to get rid of all the reactions of your past pious activities by feeling material happiness, and also by your engaging in my service, you're going to destroy any impious activities that may be there. One point, please think about. What is this about? You'll exhaust all the reactions of your good karma by feeling happiness. Isn't Prahlad beyond material happiness? Yes. He's not swayed by it. Nevertheless, Lord Nrisingadeva is telling him it's going to come just like the weather, the rain comes or the sunshine comes. Material happiness will come, but the devotee is not affected by it. Krishna explains this very point in Bhagavad Gita, how a real devotee is beyond the feelings of happiness and distress. So it's like Lord Nrisingadeva is giving Prahlad a weather report. Feelings of material happiness will come to you. But that doesn't mean Prahlad is affected by it. It just comes, as Krishna says, like the winter and summer seasons. And by it coming, you're exhausting your karmic reactions. Because both bad karma and good karma bind you to the material world. So while Prahlad is doing devotional service, he's exhausting any stock of good and bad karma. And Lord Nrisingadeva happens to point out, by that feeling of material happiness, you're exhausting the reactions of your past pious activities. So the feeling may be there, but Prahlad is not swayed by it. What does Krishna say in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita? See, this is real yoga. Apuryamana, achala pratishta. Just like so many rivers pour into the ocean, but the ocean is not affected. Similarly, feelings of material happiness and distress may come to a devotee, but the devotee is not swayed by them, because the devotee is full in devotional service. So Lord Nrisingadeva is telling Prahlad, those rivers may pour into your bhakti ocean, but you're not going to be affected by it. And by those rivers pouring into the bhakti ocean of your service, you're going to exhaust all these karmic reactions. So this is very fascinating. You're getting to see the holistic picture of a devotee in action. And then Lord Nrisingadeva tells him, because there is such a thing as time, and you're in the material world, you will give up your body. Even though you're not an ordinary person. This is very educational for us, that no matter how exalted we are in this material world, we have to give up this body. This is why Lord Krishna took away the Yadu dynasty in such an extraordinarily dramatic way. They annihilated each other. the members of the Yadu dynasty. Why did Krishna make such a graphic demonstration? Jiva Goswami says that Krishna wanted to devalue the material world. When you hear about the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty, they slaughtered each other. What do you think? What kind of world is this? I gotta get out of here. So that's what Krishna wants. He wants that reaction in you. This could happen to the Yadus. What about me? So, in other words, this is how Krishna is devaluing the material world. Like, look what happened to the Yadus. Why are you attached to such a place? You're nowhere near the level of the Yadus, and you want to cling to this world when the Yadus ended in this way, apparently? Similarly, Prahlad Maharaj is told by Lord Nishinadev, there is the time factor. You'll give up your body. But Prahlad is not attached to his body. He's simply setting an example. And then Lord Nishinadev says, the glories of your activities will be sung in the upper planetary systems. The devotee is glorious. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is glorious. One last point. Prabhupada writes in the purport, one should live in the material world very expertly. The material world is known as a world of duality because one sometimes has to act impiously and sometimes has to act piously. Although one does not want to act impiously, the world is so fashioned that there's always danger. Padam padam yadvipadam. So what is that danger? We think of danger as a threat to our life, threat to our neighborhood or city or country, threat to our body, threat to our mind. But here we see that someone with knowledge has a much different concept of what is danger. Danger is that I unintentionally will commit an impious activity and I must get the result then. And as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Svalpam Apyasya Dharmasya Trayate Mahatovaya, just a little advancement in bhakti will prevent you from incurring the greatest danger, losing your human form of life as you're overpowered by karmic reactions that force you into a lower form of life. So we have a different standard of what danger is. We're being warned. The world is so fashioned that there's always such danger of performing impious activities. Remember the conversation between the Vishnu Dutas and Yama Dutas in the sixth canto? When the Vishnu Dutas challenged the Yama Dutas, do you know who is a suitable candidate for punishment? Why are you trying to take Ajamiya? And so the Yama Dutas had to explain their whole portfolio. And they said, actually, everyone in the material world is a suitable candidate for us. How could that be? You thought that only those who committed impious activities would see the Yamadutas at the time of death. But the Yamadutas know. They said the way this world is constructed is that sooner or later we get everyone. Not in this lifetime, next lifetime, doesn't matter. We'll be there for you. Because you have to trip up. As Prabhupada writes, the world is so fashioned that there's always this danger of committing an impious activity. And so therefore the Yamadutta said, we know we're going to get you sooner or later. You may act piously in this lifetime even. You may get away with it. But next lifetime, or the lifetime after, you'll slip up. We'll be there for you. Take care of you. These intricacies of karma are beyond the human intelligence. I was speaking in Los Angeles, I think it was just last week. And I told the devotees about a strange karmic situation. You know, in the USA, everyone can pack a gun. You know, to be an American means you have a gun. And try as some politicians like They cannot get this gun possession out of American culture because it's viewed as a constitutional right. Just like we have the right to serve Krishna, well, there you have a right to bear gun, bear weapon. As long as it's registered, no problem. So there was this lady shopping in, what do you have here, Target or something like that? Yes, the Sangha Thunderwoods. She was shopping in the holiday season in December. She had her nieces with her, four nieces, age 9, 10, and 11, and so on. And she had her two-year-old son seated in the shopping cart. Yeah, they have shopping carts like that where you put the child there. So the mother was picking something off of the shelf in the row. And meanwhile, the little two-year-old son went into her purse, pulled out her handgun, and pulled the trigger, and the bullet killed the mother instantly. How does this happen? And all the while, these four little nieces are watching. Because he fired the gun at point blank range, she was finished. What is this kid going to think when he grows up? What kind of karmic arrangement's going on here? Makes you wonder, was he the mother's enemy in a previous life who took birth in such a way to cause her the greatest pain? It's strange. A two-year-old child. How does this happen? Reaches into mother's purse. Where does a two-year-old child learn how to fire a gun? But this is a fact. This is a factual story that happened in December. Of course, what was the reaction of the people in that area? It's in a state called Idaho, which is kind of like an outback state. And everyone especially carries a gun there. For hunting, for showing their patriotism, protect America from the communists. And that's what they think in the outback. Maybe it's a bit like Queensland, up in northern Queensland. So, the controversy was not about whether the mother should possess a gun. The debate that ensued was all about why did she bring the gun into the store? Not why does she need a gun, but why did she bring it into the store? The store is a safe place. Everyone should carry guns, of course, but she shouldn't have brought the gun into the store. That was the debate. So it makes you wonder, what kind of world is this? It's so horrible, but so unthinkable that a two-year-old child would do something like that. Innocent. Maybe the child was watching, crime TV or Western movies or something. Who knows? But 2 years old still. Are you able to figure all that out at 2 years old? So this shows you what kind of world this is. There was another incident in China last year where there was a mother, her husband, and her three-year-old child in the back, who was in the back seat of the car. So the mother is parking in an underground garage, and the husband is behind the car, beckoning her how to back the car in, But the mother gets confused, and instead of she's supposed to go forward to straighten out the wheels, she puts the car in reverse while her foot's on the accelerator pedal. And so she's ramming her husband against the wall of the garage. Well, this is all while the three-year-old child's in the back seat. And then the mother is desperate, trying to do something. And so she's got her head out the window, seeing this horrible scene of her husband. She rammed him going backwards. And so with her head out the window, she throws the car forward. And she forgets there's a pillar right there. And so her head hits the pillar, and she's finished too. The only one left is the three-year-old child in the back seat. It's like, what kind of world is this? These things happen. Yet we still want to enjoy here. That's the amazing thing. We still think that was then, I'll be all right. I have desires, and since I have desires, there must be fulfillment. Because we have this insanity, it's so important for us to hear about Prahlad Maharaj and the standard of pure love. We want pure love. You've got to come to grips with that. We've got to settle about that. Nothing else is going to satisfy us except pure love, pure devotion. Make your peace with that point, and then progress toward that goal. Admit that we can only be satisfied by pure love and a pure relationship. That's what Krishna is offering. Nothing else will satisfy us. This is stated in the beginning of Bhagavatam. Yenatma supersedati. This is the only way that the self is truly satisfied. Ahaituki apratiyata. Unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional service. By hearing about it, we become purified. And gradually, we become more and more situated in our natural status of life, in real devotional service. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.